Welcome to the City Cup of Eugene May 5th, 2017 program. Buenas tardes. Is Oregon ready for ranked choice voting? My name is Juan Carlos Valle, City Club Board President. Support for City Club of Eugene is provided by our members and, of course, sponsors, including Evans, Elder, Brown, and Subet, a Eugene commercial real estate company dedicated to selling, leasing, and developing office, retail, investment, and industrial properties. And of course, assisting clients in completing the 1031 tax deferred exchanges. Now on to the program. Is Oregon ready for ranked choice voting? Do the winners of an election reflect the popular will? Many election reform efforts have been directed at campaign finance, redistricting, voter registration, and ensuring our elections are fair to all candidates and ideas and parties. Today, we are focusing on the method used to tally up votes to determine who wins this last ranked choice voting. So to the entire state of Maine, where 52% of those who voted supported a measure to use the method for election at all state offices. So ranked choice voting, also known as state or instant runoff voting, allows voters to list candidates in order of preference so that if in the first round no one wins a majority, officials can recount the ballots immediately until someone does win. Proponents say that voting method ensures that whomever is elected has the support of a majority of voters. This claim addresses one of the biggest objections to the current system, where a mere plurality can win. That is possible for some, but to gain office, even in most voters don't support them. In California, municipal elections in Oakland and in San Francisco using ranked choice voting has been controversial. Sometimes there were unexpected results. Surveys also showed many voters were neglecting to indicate their second and third choices. There we go. In other counties, including Ireland, in Australia, use ranked choice voting in national elections. Our speakers today will share their insights about this unique voting system and other aspects of elections. We're pleased to have the program coordinator, Mr. Randy Priest, that will introduce the program. And thank you, Randy, for making the time, to not for this program, but many programs you put together. Please welcome Randy Prince.
Thank you, Juan Carlos. As he pointed out, we are looking at ranked choice voting. It's an alternative to our current method of choosing who serves in government. In ranked choice voting, also known as instant runoff voting, the voters mark not only who they would most like to see win, but also get to rank the others. Who would be their second choice, third choice, going right down to the list of the bottom, the candidate that would be their last choice. It's not easy to miss the news that this is a tough year for democracy in America. In the nation's capital, there's a continuing dysfunction. It seems related to the perception that last fall's election didn't really select the person who best represented the popular will. The public's desire to change entrenched political parties was obvious, but after the election, it seems like we still have the same old swamp. Unfulfilled desires for change are found in our state as well. Sometimes political challengers to establish incumbents are so discouraged by the system they don't even run. And when they do, there's the problem of too many people voting to keep the person they don't want from winning rather than voting for what they do want. It's complicated when a candidate can come out on top with a total percentage far short of a majority, no runoff. Which is all the more likely now that one of Oregon's minor political parties has been elevated to major party status. Now it's Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. So ranked choice voting is proposed as a remedy. It's been endorsed by figures as diverse as John McCain, Barack Obama, and Bernie Sanders. There are other suggestions. Locally, Mark Frohmeyer, who's in our audience today, has proposed a somewhat different system that gives candidates a score rather than a rank and provides for a runoff. But ranked choice has a lot of history. It's in practice in several countries, and a number of cities in the U.S. use it. It was approved, as Juan Carlos mentioned, in the state of Maine. And last fall, it was passed by the voters in Benton County, yeah, up there in Corvallis, to elect their county officials. From Corvallis today, Blair Beaubier has come down. He was one of the chief petitioners, one of two chief petitioners, a leader in the effort to put ranked choice in practice in Benton County. He's also played a role in changing the election systems of several cities in California, including Oakland, Berkeley, and San Francisco. His writings on elections have appeared in the Register Guard, the Weekly, and many times in the Oregonian and other newspapers, such as the USA Today and Los Angeles Times. He's a Benton County Planning Commissioner and practices law with an emphasis on serving those of low means, modest means. But first, we're going to get the big picture from Kristen Eberhardt, who has come down from Portland, and she calls herself a proud policy wonk. She works for the Sightline Institute that is based in Seattle. You may have heard of it. She researches and writes about both climate change and democracy reform. Before she came to work for the Sightline Institute, she was at the National Resources Defense Council and leading climate change work in California. She has graduated with honors from Stanford, cum laude from the Duke University School of Law, and earned a degree in Master's of Environmental Management from Duke's Nicholas School of the Environment. And I want to welcome her and thank her so much for coming down on a rainy Friday, Kristen Eberhardt.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today. So, as we all know, there's some interest right now in democracy. Maybe it's because for the second time in five presidential elections, the person who won the less votes won the presidency, and that person is now somewhat unpopular. Or maybe it's other things that are going on in our communities and states right now. But we're kind of wondering, is there a better way to do this? So I'm going to talk about two different kinds of voting, because in the United States, we vote the same way to elect our mayor, our president, our legislature, and there's actually different roles that different elected officials serve, and therefore different problems that we might want to solve and different voting systems that could solve them. So right now, we sort of lump together everything, but really, when you're electing a executive officer, when you're electing a president, a mayor, a governor, you can only get one person. And so that person is never going to make 100% of the people happy. But what you hope is that they have broad appeal, that they can work with a variety of interest groups, that they can reach out. And if, you know, 40% of the people are unhappy with that person, that's kind of how it goes when you only have one representative. On the other hand, our legislative bodies have 30 in the Oregon Senate, 535 in the U.S. Congress, 9 in the Eugene City Council. And so if 40% of voters were to feel like not a single one of those people spoke for them, that would be a really big problem. You want this body of people to represent the diversity of the people that they're representing ideologically, ethnically, racially, geographically, and in terms of their life experience. So I'm going to separate those things out and first talk about electing an executive officer and then talk about electing a legislative body. So what is broken with the way that we elect executive officers? So the probably main thing that most people know about is you often feel like you're voting for the lesser of two evils, rather than actually casting a vote for somebody you enthusiastically would like to win and represent you. So when we have top two primaries, a very small number of people narrow the field for the rest of us. So even in our presidential election, about 15% of the voters selected Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton for the rest of us. And so then when we got to the general election and we looked at the ballot and we saw these two options, and some of us didn't really like either of those options, and maybe if some of the people who had been eliminated earlier by that very small chunk of voters who voted in the party primaries had still been on the ballot, we might have liked them. Maybe if we could actually cast a vote for one of the third party candidates on the ballot and not feel like we were throwing our vote away, we would feel better about participating in democracy and get a better result. So another result of this problem that we're kind of voting for the lesser of two evils is that unpopular candidates can win. So if you have two like-minded candidates who split the vote and a third candidate who a majority of people didn't want, they can win in plurality voting. Or even in a top two primary where technically you have to win a majority because there's only two of you in the general election. But still, if the primary narrowed the field in a way that people didn't like, if you had a safe district for the Republicans, and so a Tea Party candidate won, and so then the conservatives are left with, you know, I didn't really want a Tea Party candidate, but I also don't want to vote for the Democrat. So I guess I'll choose this guy, but they're not really the true popular winner. And then another problem that this way that we vote brings up is that campaigns are negative. So we've all seen this happen, right? We see the campaigns talk about people's hair, about their emails, about their hands, about their sex lives, and everything, it seems, except what they're going to do as a leader, right? Like what they care about, what their vision is for how we're going to solve the problems in our community or our state or our country. And those issues don't get talked about because the way that we vote makes it so that you just are trying to push down the other person. You're trying to get your candidate, trying to turn people off to your opponent instead of turn people on to you. So ranked choice voting, where you get to write, here's my first choice, here's my second choice, here's my third choice. It is a way that can solve these problems. So you don't have to worry that if you there's two candidates that are sort of similar to each other, you can rank them one and two, knowing that other people might rank them two and three. And one of them is going to win out against the person who is less popular. And that results in you can't have an unpopular person win when everybody gets to a vote in an instant runoff. And interestingly, we have experience in the United States with these voting systems. So there's 13 places across the United States that use ranked choice voting. And so researchers have been able to look at those elections and see what happened. And so they've looked at some cities that used ranked choice voting, compared them with comparable cities that did not use ranked choice voting, and asked people, how did you feel about the tenor of this campaign? Did you feel like it was positive? Did you feel like it was issue-oriented? Or did you feel like it was just about personal attacks about hair? And it turns out that in the ranked choice elections, people felt like the campaign was more positive. And the reason for that is that a candidate, if you know that somebody can rank you second and you might still get that vote if their first choice gets eliminated, then you ask for their second choice. Right now, if you're walking around and you see a yard sign for your opponent, if you're a candidate for city council, you don't knock on that door because you know they've decided and they only have one vote and they're done. You only knock on the doors where you can be their first choice. But in a ranked choice election, the candidates for mayor in these cities that use ranked choice voting, they see that yard sign, they knock on that door. And they say, I know you like my opponent, but I'd like to talk to you about my positions, and I'd like to talk to you about my vision for the city, and I hope that I could be your second choice. And it's not in your interest to say, and by the way, your first choice, he's a real jerk, right? You already know it's your first choice, so there's no point in attacking him and his hair and his hands. You want to talk about you. You want to talk about what you're going to do for the city. And so the statistics bear that out. And this is Mark's, right here in Eugene, his voting system that he's invented also has promise for solving the same problems because you can give a score to each of your candidates. And so you could knock on that door and say, okay, you're going to give your favorite a 5, but could you give me a 4? So let's talk about legislative bodies. So I know there's a lot of attention to the president. You know, there's just a lot of media attention. But I actually think that our Congress is much more important. So if you look at the U.S. Constitution, Article 1 is the legislative branch. And that's because our founding fathers were, understandably, a little bit worried about monarchs. And so they made the legislative branch the place that held the power of the people. And if the legislative branch does its job, you can't have a monarch, you can't have a rogue president that really messes things up. So I think that the greatest threat to our country is not a president messing things up, but a Congress failing to do its job. So the way that we elect legislative bodies, whether that's the city council or the state legislature or the federal Congress, has real implications for how well our government works overall. So our problems right now with our legislative system is they don't really reflect the people. So in the United States, 80% of our representatives are men, even though 50% of the people are women. Here in Oregon, we have about one quarter of the people are people of color, and that is not reflected in our elected representatives. And ideologically, there's a big spread here in Oregon. We have some strong Green Party, we have some libertarians, and yet you don't see them in the legislature, and those views get left out. When you're talking about solutions, you have two solutions on the table when really there's a bigger variety available. So when people feel left out of the system, when they feel like their voice isn't heard, they are more likely to feel unhappy about the system as a whole and to not feel bought in. So another problem, in general, legislative systems can be proportional or majoritarian. So majoritarian means there's sort of two groups that dominate everything, and proportional means you have a much greater diversity. So our system is majoritarian, and one of the things that keeps it majoritarian is that district lines, not voters, determine who gets elected. So in North Carolina is a really stark example of this. When the Democrats drew the lines in 2010, they had a lot of Democratic representatives. When the Republicans redrew the lines in 2012, a lot of Republican representatives. The voters were the same. The voters' preferences were the same, but who drew the lines determined who got elected. And that's not how it should work in a democracy. People should be able to choose their representatives, not the other way around. So another problem that we have in our majoritarian system is that nearly half of voters have no hope of electing somebody to their legislature who represents them. If you are a Republican in Portland, you can cast your vote until the cows come home, and you are never going to see a Republican representative from Portland. If you are a progressive in rural Oregon, you can cast your vote every time, but you're never actually going to see somebody representing your views in Salem. In a proportional system, most people can cast their vote and know that somebody that they like from their region is going to be representing them. And that also means that they can have somebody they can call who they know represents them and also shares their views and is going to be a champion for those views in the legislature. So another problem that this creates is that politicians grasp at quick fixes. So they're trying to win this election, they're trying to, you know, kind of put their opponent down, and they're just saying whatever it's going to take to get elected sometimes. And the evidence is that in proportional systems, that because they know that they're actually going to have to be working together in this more complex environment to craft solutions, that legislators, when they're running, they focus more on the issues and they focus more on actually talking about complex problems. So the final problem that we see in the United States is that extractive interests often have a disproportionate influence in our legislature. Because there's only two parties, it's much easier to capture one of those parties. And when those parties stop responding to the people, people get upset, right? Right now, people are pretty upset with the Democratic Party. People who were previously Democratic voters are feeling like maybe the Democratic Party isn't doing what it's supposed to do. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Vote for a Republican? If you're a left-leaning person, you've got one option on the table, and even if you don't like it, you keep voting for them. In a proportional system, if the Democratic Party stopped responding to the people, another left-leaning party would come up, and they would start saying, you know what, we're for basically things that Bernie Sanders said he was for. Instead of having to try and co-opt the Democratic Party, he would have his own party. And if that message appealed to more people, then he would win more power. But when in a two-party dominated system, you don't really have that option. So there's a interesting model for the United States, is that New Zealand used to vote the way that we vote to elect their legislature. They were a British colony. Only British colonies vote the way that we vote. And they said, maybe this isn't working so well. And they had a national referendum to decide how to vote differently. And they picked something called mixed member proportional. So the way that it works is you get one vote for your local representative, just like we do now, but you get a second vote for your favorite party. And so then the legislature, you get your local representative, so you still have the geographic diversity that we have, but you also have the ideological diversity that other civilized countries have. And the result here is that they have an ideologically diverse legislature, and they also have more women and more people of color in their legislature, and people feel much more bought in. So there have been several attempts to overturn this system, and the people of New Zealand have always defended it because they said, we did that thing and we're not going back. And ranked choice voting is another way that you can get proportional representation. Ireland and Australia use ranked choice voting to get a bigger diversity of legislators. So the good news is we are in this moment in the United States where people are really interested in thinking about different solutions, and other places have pioneered some of those solutions for us. Benton County is pioneering one of the solutions right here in Oregon, and other places in Oregon could start trying to vote better. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm Blair Bobier from Benton County. Before I dive into what I'd prepared for my presentation, I want to follow up on a couple of points from Kristen's rather excellent presentation. We're focused a lot on the presidential race for good reason, because we have a president who lost the popular vote. It's interesting, if you look at the popular vote for Congress and added up the votes for Democrats and Republicans in all the 435 districts, what you would find is that in this past election, it was basically a tie. Republicans got a handful more votes, but basically a statistical tie. So now the Republicans control Congress, because when you win the majority of seats, you get to elect the speaker, you get to see who controls the committees, they appoint the committee chairs, and you control the agenda. But they didn't really have that much of a majority, and in 2012, when the Republicans won the House again, they had actually lost the popular vote. So problems with our voting system are systemic and pervasive. And as Kristen has said, there really has never been a better time to look at changing our voting system. We have a president who lost the popular vote. This is the second time this has happened in the past five elections. And if we go back another 10 years, you can see that Bill Clinton, though he won the plurality, he actually did not win a majority of the vote in either of his two elections. And when you continue to have elections where the loser wins, it's really hard to call this a democracy with a straight face. It certainly undermines confidence and integrity in the system. And I want to be clear, this is not about the guy in the White House. This is a nonpartisan issue or a multipartisan issue. And if we go back to the November general election and the presidential race, we need to remember that we had two of the most unpopular candidates in the history of this country running. And those were our choices. And we heard charges from both what we could call the left and the right that the system is rigged. And there was some merit into those accusations from both sides. But think about this. Michael Bloomberg was considering running on an independent ticket. He didn't do it. Why? Because he thought he would be a spoiler. He didn't think he could mount an effort that would actually result in him winning. Now think about that. Here's a guy who's a billionaire, was the mayor of the largest city in this country. He owns a media empire, for crying out loud. And he thought, I'm just going to be a spoiler. He could not run. He couldn't have a viable campaign just because of the voting system. Well, ranked choice voting is a solution for that. We've talked briefly about its extensive use, and I just want to rattle off a few of the cities it's used in. It's used in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Those are two different cities. It's used in Portland, Maine. It's been mentioned that it's used in Oakland, Berkeley, San Francisco, San Leandro. It's also used in Louisiana and Arkansas, where it's used for overseas voters. Australia uses it. Ireland uses it. Most recently, London, Ontario, just decided to use it. That's a very recent development. Maine will be using it for statewide elections. And of course, your superior neighbor to the north, Benton County, will be using it in 2018. Now, think about the way that ranked choice voting could have made a difference in oh so many elections. If you look back at the Republican primary and some of the statistics that we had up here a second ago, you can see that the person who ultimately won the Republican primary did not get a majority of the votes. And if you look at the total from the other candidates, that's where the majority sentiment was. Ranked choice voting lets you, the voter, do more with your vote. It really puts you back in the driver's seat, gives you more power and control. You don't have to worry about vote splitting, where you think, you know, if I vote for this candidate, is the other candidate that I don't like going to win? There's two candidates that have the same type of ideology. I support them both. That whole problem is gone. You don't have to worry about voting for the lesser of two evils because you can vote your hopes. And if your long shot candidate doesn't make it, you've got a backup vote. You've got your second choice vote. When we started looking into this in Benton County, and we actually did a little bit of polling on it, we found that people were just really discouraged. They were fed up with the voting system, fed up with elections. They were tired of voting for lesser of evils. They were tired of vote splitting. And they were enthusiastic about seeing something that actually gave them a solution. When we were out petitioning for this, and we mentioned that we wanted to change the voting system, we didn't have to get a whole lot further in the conversation before people would take the clipboards out of our hands and sign their names. So ranked choice voting has a number of advantages. It gives more choices. It makes things much more likely that you will have majority representation, certainly creates broader consensus among candidates. It broadens the debate. Right now, the debate is so narrow, if there's even a debate about the issues. Think about all the things that never get touched. Climate change, probably one of the most pressing problems that we have. We don't talk about it. Homelessness. How much did that come up in the campaign? Size of the military budget? Seem to remember the debate about that being more or more, right? But so there's really a very narrow debate that takes place in this country, and it's very different elsewhere where they have different voting methods. And as Kristen said, ranked choice voting increases civility, it increases the level of discourse, and we've seen this in other places. Now, for folks who are considering this for Eugene or Lane County, ranked choice voting can tackle a number of different issues. If you have two rounds of runoffs, that can be pretty expensive. And with ranked choice voting, also known as instant runoff, you can eliminate one of the two elections. When you have two rounds of elections, that creates some really long campaigns. That means for someone who wants to run for a local civic office that maybe doesn't pay anything, or pays very little, that person has to take the time out of their life to run not one, but two campaigns. So ranked choice voting, if it can eliminate an election, would encourage more qualified people to run for office. When you have runoff elections in two different elections, so you have a primary like in May, the general election in November, that attracts two very different electorates. In the first one in May, you tend to get a whiter, wealthier electorate, and the electorate that shows up in November is generally much more diverse and much more reflective of the population as a whole. So if you have candidates who win in May, if an election's decided in May, then that's not really a candidate that's reflecting the population as a whole. San Francisco, when it changed to using ranked choice voting, it did it in large part to eliminate an election and to eliminate that disparity. San Francisco had a pretty unusual system. They had their first election in November. Then if there was a need for a runoff, it happened in December. And after Thanksgiving, nobody wants to get off the couch if they can. And voter turnout just plummeted, and they were able to eliminate that entire election and save buku bucks. Since using it, San Francisco has generated the most diverse board of supervisors in the city's history. Oakland, which uses it, elected both their first woman and first Asian American mayor. And it's been really interesting to see the cooperation among candidates in the Bay Area, where candidates will actually form little slates or coalitions, and they will print up their ballot material and say, I'm asking for your first choice, but here's who we recommend for your second or your third choice. Organizations that give endorsements don't have to worry if, say, two environmentalists come to the Sierra Club that are both longtime Sierra Club volunteers. Sierra Club doesn't have to say, you, yes, you, we've known you for years, but sorry, first choice, second choice. It's worked out very well. Basically, there's three ways to get the option of ranked choice voting before the voters. It can come up from a charter review committee. Those generally are convened only once every 5 or 10 years or so. So if someone's in a rush, that might not be the way to go unless the timing's just right. You can get a referral from the city council or from the county commission, or as we did in Benton County, you can do an initiative. We chose to do it by initiative because we wanted to demonstrate the grassroots support that existed. There were some other reasons as well, but that was our primary motivating factor. Basically, we wanted to improve our local elections, and we wanted to create a model that other municipalities could use throughout Oregon, and eventually, we hope, for statewide use. Our campaign was a very grassroots one. It was nonpartisan or multipartisan, depending on how you look at it. I come from years of working with the Green Party. My other chief petitioner is State Representative Dan Rayfield, who's a Democrat, is the majority whip in the Oregon House. As many great movements have started, including portions of the American Revolution, Dan and I got together in a tavern to talk about this. We discovered our common interest, and pretty soon we had a small group of people together, including Alan Zundel from Eugene, who helped me draft the actual initiative. And we started kind of kicking this idea around actively towards the end of 2015, and small group of people meeting maybe weekly, every couple of weeks or so, through early 2016. And we drafted the initiative, we submitted it through the county council, as in lawyer council in Benton County. Got it approved for circulation for petitioning. We needed, I believe, 2,895 signatures, give or take. We decided we needed to get 3,600 to account for spoilage, as it's known, for invalid signatures. And we set out to the Saturday market just a little bit over a year ago with our clipboards in hand. We relied exclusively on volunteers at first, and we were pretty much on target, but for our signature goals, we wanted to get the signatures in by August, which was the deadline for last November's ballot. If we didn't meet that, we could have put it on in the next election, but we wanted to get it on this past time. And so in July, we hired a campaign manager who helped really give us a cushion, and in August, we turned in over 4,500 signatures, well above the 2,900 or so that we needed. We racked up endorsements. We got the endorsements of all three Benton County commissioners, the mayor of Corvallis, 9 of 11 Corvallis city councilors. We had support of the local Democratic Party, of the Pacific Green Party, the Libertarian Party, the Progressive Party, and the Working Families Party. And we also had the support of Dan Rayfield's Republican opponent from the prior election. The local League of Women Voters supported it, as did the local branch of the NAACP. We had farmers, we had professors, we had folks from the business community, and the Corvallis Gazette Times and the Corvallis Advocate, a weekly, also supported it. There was no organized opposition to speak of. There were some random letters to the editor and some folks who just didn't want it, but nonetheless, we won 54-46, which is a pretty healthy margin. And so ranked choice voting, presuming that we get the funding, will be used to elect our county commissioners in general and special elections. We didn't touch the primaries. Basically, we wanted to leave the parties to the primaries. Ranked choice voting is actually used by some states' parties already, but we didn't want to drag them into this. So I said if we get the funding, we put a unique provision in our ballot measure. One of the ways that people have opposed a change or transition in voting systems is by saying it'll cost too much. Some places like San Francisco actually saved money because they eliminated an election. We would not be eliminating an election in Benton County, so we put a provision in our measure that the measure would not take effect until we had gotten the money from outside of the county. So we've put in a request through our local state representative, Dan Rayfield, and hope that we'll be able to get some funding from the legislature, which we see Benton County being a pilot program, and we think the cost should be borne by folks all around Oregon, because this is a model that we know is going to be replicated. When you change voting systems, you have to do education and outreach. That's what San Francisco and Oakland and all the other jurisdictions that have transitioned have done. They've had public service announcements, they've created posters, and in other places, like in the Bay Area, they have to do that in sometimes up to 7 languages. We don't have to bear that much of a burden, but we will need to do outreach, and the technology also needs to be addressed, because not every voting machine, every tabulator is compatible with ranked choice voting from the get-go. Some are, some just need a little bit of tweaks. Our county clerk, James Morales in Benton County, who's great, is working on this right now. Our machines are capable of doing it, and I think just with some software tweaks, we'll be there. If it turns out that the funding is not forthcoming from the legislature, then we'll be turning to foundations, nonprofit organizations, and we'll pass a hat around this room. But we're pretty intent on having it implemented in 2018 in Benton County. I'd like to say in closing that democracy is about choices. It's about having options. And if you don't have choices, and if you don't really have options or meaningful ones, then just how democratic can we really consider our system? If people go to the polls and think, I'm going to waste my vote, or my vote's not going to count, that doesn't cut it. Ranked choice voting puts the power where it belongs, in the hands of the voters. Thank you.
Okay, we're also privileged to have a very well-known person from the media. So our first questionnaire today is Mr. Jack Man Wilson. He is the editorial page editor of the Eugene Race to Guard, who will be, he was kind enough to come out and participate in this program and be the first questionnaire. So Mr. Wilson, if you're ready, go right ahead.
Thank you, and thanks for that, those excellent presentations. Both of you noted that Maine has adopted instant runoff voting statewide, and the Maine League of Women Voters did their usual thorough and even-handed analysis of the measure that came before the voters, and noted in the course of this that in 1952, Kenneth Arrow had been awarded the Nobel Prize in Economics for proving that no voting system is perfect. So, since this has been proven, what are the weaknesses of instant runoff voting? What would you identify as the Achilles heel? Is there any way to game the system? What should we be on guard against if we go in this direction?
Yeah, I'd like the Nobel Prize for showing that there's no perfect bullet solution to things. So in voting systems, there's often a trade-off between, can you safely vote for more than one? So like, if your favorite is Bernie, is it safe for you to also vote for Hillary? On the one hand, or on the other hand, is it possible that if Bernie can't win, that Hillary will also lose if you rank Bernie and then Hillary? So ranked choice voting's weakness is in a small number of cases where your favorite is strong enough to make it to the final runoff, but not strong enough to win in the final runoff, then you might be better off ranking your second choice first if your second choice can win. So if your first choice is not strong enough to make it to the runoff, so if your first choice is Nader, and he's not going to win this election, you rank him first, he gets eliminated, your second vote goes to Gore. But if your first choice is, say, Gore, and it turns out that for some reason there's another candidate that is stronger than him, and so he makes it to the runoff and then loses to that other candidate in the runoff. So it's this can happen where you're like, oh man, I should have given up on Gore and, you know, gone for somebody else. But it happens in a very small amount of cases.
I'd say that one of the criticisms I often hear is that ranked choice voting is too complicated. And I'm glad people are chuckling, because all you have to do is number 1, 2, 3. And quite literally, the elementary school kids at my kids' charter school use a form of ranked choice voting to pick their projects for project day. So I tell people, if the elementary school kids can handle it, so can the voters.
Okay, folks, as it is a tradition of City Club, we're going to break for about five minutes to formulate your question. If you're not a City Club member, you can still participate to help formulate questions. However, remember that only City Club members get to come to the microphone to ask questions. So we'll see you in about 5 minutes.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Welcome back to the May 5th City Club program. Is Oregon ready for ranked choice voting? Support for the City Club of Eugene is from members and sponsors, including the AARP Oregon, keeping Oregonians informed, engaged, and active, and our friends at Dot Dotson Photography, Eugene's imagery experts for over 80 years. Now we're going to follow the tradition of City Club to allow members to come to the microphone to ask questions. We only have less than 18 minutes to ask Q&A, so we're going to keep that 30-second question and have the speakers answer to your questions. Are we ready? Go ahead.
All right, I'm John Addick, City Club member since 2003. My question relates to Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, which eliminated all limits on campaign donations to candidates for public office. And the question is, how do you visualize Citizens United decision and its implementation by various individuals and parties impact ranked choice voting?
Okay, who takes that one first?
So yeah, there are many problems with our democracy. Ranked choice voting won't solve all of them. But there are other solutions to Citizens United. So the city of Seattle just implemented a groundbreaking program called Democracy Vouchers, where every citizen will get a voucher. And if a candidate opts into the program and says, I will voluntarily not take any big money, then they have access to those vouchers. The city of Portland just adopted a program called Open and Accountable Elections Portland. Same thing, candidates can voluntarily say, I will not take any checks over $250, but now I can get a match for my small donations. So within the constrained limits that the Supreme Court has set for us, these are the solutions that are bubbling up.
And I'll just briefly add that while ranked choice voting can reduce the costs of elections and campaigns if we eliminate one election, it is not a cure-all. So folks could look at other organizations such as Move to Amend, which is looking to actually amend the Constitution so that we don't have the Citizens United issue. And once again, people have the power. So if there are candidates who are taking money from sources that you don't like or trust, don't vote for them.
Next question.
Hi, Marilyn Milne. I'm City Club member for a very long time. My question is to ask you to do a little crystal ball gazing and give us your best guess on how the major parties in Oregon would support or not support ranked choice voting, and would any of it have to do with the latest redistricting of various voting areas.
Okay, Blair, you go first.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Well, I think we've seen that the Democratic Party has supported ranked choice voting. I don't know if it's in the state platform. I know it was in the Multnomah County platform for the Multnomah County Democrats at a point. I think we need to look to both ranked choice voting and proportional representation because in different areas, as was pointed out earlier, some places Democrats don't get representation, some places Republicans don't get representation. So in different places, it's in different parties' interests to change the system. I think the parties are going to make those calculations, and I would hope that they would come to an agreement as to what's best for the state rather than what's best for their own parties. But I think that they may well be making those decisions on another basis. But I will point out again that in Benton County, we had a multi-party coalition that consisted of, I think, five different political parties. So this is really the wave of the future, this type of voting. And it's really kind of, do you want to get out ahead of it or do you want to kind of get run over by it?
Kristen?
People in power don't like anything that threatens their power. That said, there is the potential in Oregon, as Blair said, both parties are underrepresented in certain areas, right? So the Republicans are underrepresented in Portland, Democrats are underrepresented in some rural areas. And with the redistricting process coming up in 2021, both parties are kind of thinking about what that looks like. And one possible solution is if you have, instead of having, you know, 60 different districts, if you had 12 districts electing five people each and you got to rank your ballot, then you'd be guaranteed that the full range of views within that larger district would get represented. And there's an attraction there for example, Republicans who might like, hey, we're gonna get a person in Portland for the first time ever. And for Democrats also who might actually want a little bit more variety. They might want to have a progressive wing within the Democratic Party that right now they can't get because they're all running to the center in these single winner elections. And in a spread of five, all of a sudden they can get a wing. They can get, you know, sort of a couple moderate Democrats, and then they can get maybe a Libertarian on the other side who comes together with them on certain other issues so that they can actually break through some of the gridlock and get some other things done. So there is potential attraction if they wanted it.
Next question.
Yeah, I'm Jack Dresser. I'm a retired behavioral scientist from Oregon Research Institute. And, of course, we use lots of these kinds of measurement scales or attitudes and so forth. So I wanted to inquire about the feasibility of an alternative iteration of this theme, which Juan Carlos actually mentioned, using rating scales rather than ranking. For one thing, I think it would increase voter turnout because I would have I would use a rating scale with negative as well as positive options. And I think you'd get a lot more voter turnout if people really felt they could express themselves.
So what I would say is that it's pretty challenging just to get the public to consider some kind of change to the voting system. So personally, as an activist and an organizer, I want to present an option that's been tried and tested somewhere else. So when I could put this on the ballot in Benton County and say, this has worked in Australia for 100 years, this works in Ireland, this works in San Francisco and Minneapolis, I'd prefer to have something that's been tried and tested. For myself, just intuitively, I like ranking things. I know that I've got my first choice, my second choice, my third choice. That's pretty clear to me. If I had to start putting things on a scale, is this person a 6 out of a scale of 10? I can't even tell them when I have to go to the doctor, you know, what's the pain on a scale of, I don't know, maybe a 3? I'm not, you know. So intuitively, I like ranking, and it's been tested.
Next question.
Camilla Pratt, City Club member. I'm wondering what the process is for going to ranked voting. What does the city of Eugene, for example, if we want ranked voting, how do we do it? How do we get there?
So there's a few ways to do it. You could take it to the Charter Review Committee. You can ask the City Council to put it on the ballot, or you folks can start an initiative. And if you want to start an initiative, come talk to me and I'll tell you how to do it.
Our next question.
John DeLo, City Club member. I'm just, this looks like it might be a little complicated as far as registration go, because would there still be parties? Would there, how would they send out the ballots? Who, how would you establish yourself?
So one way that you would do it is that you just eliminate the primaries, and it wouldn't matter what party you're in. Everybody votes in the general. You get to rank all your choices.
With the current change, it doesn't affect parties or voter registration. So right now in Benton County, our county commissioners are partisan offices, so they run as Democrats, Republicans, Green. It doesn't affect the primary. It's not eliminating an election. All it does is it applies to the general election, and you don't change your voter registration. You just rank the candidates in order of preference.
Next
James
question.
City Club member. Our table was interested in the system that voting is embedded in that are problematic, like the Electoral College, like gerrymandering, like what constitutes a party. How does the public know what it is? Those are, we had several others, but that's enough.
Kristen, you want to do that one first?
So the Electoral College, there's a solution. It's called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, and 12 states have signed on, not Oregon. Call your legislators. And in terms of gerrymandering, so yeah, the problem with gerrymandering is when you have only one person winning, it really matters where those lines are drawn, because if you get this neighborhood in, it could tilt one way, and if you get this neighborhood in, it could tilt the other, which is why multi-member districts, where you're electing three or five at a time, all of a sudden the lines really don't matter. It doesn't really matter who draws them. You're always going to get a spread that represents the people within that district.
Blair? Okay, next question.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. I am interested in the effects of the instant runoff in the campaigning and the spending of money for that campaign. Do we have information how that has changed when people start using instant runoff? How does instant runoff affect? You mentioned it, Kristen, a little bit about going door to door and seeing, but the spending of money to try to track those money. What history have we got on that?
I haven't looked at the data specifically on ranked choice voting versus single winner, but I know that, for example, Cambridge, Massachusetts, which uses ranked choice voting and multi-member districts, so they often candidates will run in that slate where they're saying, you know, we kind of agree with each other, please rank all of us. And so they'll share costs in that way, which brings down the cost for each individual, because they'll share those overhead costs of, you know, the office space or the call banking or whatever. And so it makes it a little bit easier for new candidates to come in and join the slate, because they don't have to like start their whole campaign from the ground up. They can sort of piggyback onto their like-minded candidates.
Blair.
And Bob, I don't know for certain, but I would suspect that at fairvote.org, fairvote as one word, fairvote's the leading organization in the country that promotes different electoral type changes, including the National Popular Vote Plan. I would bet that they've got research and information specifically about places like San Francisco where they eliminated an election, and I would suspect that that resulted in significant savings in terms of campaigns.
Next question.
Antoni Lewis. Our table was concerned about the small, relatively small percentage of participation in the last vote and many other votes. And we were wondering, do you have feedback from other jurisdictions that have used ranked choice voting? Have they shown an increase in voter participation?
Blair, go ahead.
So, I believe the answer is yes. I think there's mixed data, and so you'd have to look to different sources, and some will say turnout has gone down, and other research says that turnout has gone up, it's increased. So I'd like to believe that. But I think that it's also somewhat common sense that if you have more choices and you think your vote's actually going to count, and if it brings more voices into the system, that that's going to drive up voter turnout. And if we look at every other democratic country that uses either ranked choice voting or proportional representation, their voter turnout leaves us in the dust.
And last question.
Yes, thank you. Hello, Blair. I don't know if you remember me. I was on a charter review committee in 2002, I believe it was, and we put a couple of questions before the voters. One that passed was that we start paying our city council a mayor. One that didn't pass was ranked choice voting. So one of the reasons that we thought that we should be paying our city council more was because we thought we would have more candidates running. That has not proven to be the case. I'm wondering, in ranked choice voting, do you get more candidates?
Kristen, you want to take that one first?
I don't have hard statistics on this, but the intuition is that if you know that you can get a ranking, you're more likely to run, because, you know, if you think nobody's going to vote for me because I know I'm the kind of like the third choice or the outsider or the minor party, what's the point in running this whole campaign? Versus if you think, you know what, I can campaign to say, even though I'm the outsider, you know, here's my platform, give me your second vote, more people might run. And I, like I said, I don't have the hard data, but I know that in the cities in the United States that have done ranked choice voting, many of them have had very competitive three-way campaigns.
And I'll echo that. I don't know the hard data, but certainly looking at the races in San Francisco and both studying them and then from the time that I was there working on the elections, there were sometimes 20 candidates in one district. So it seems like it's definitely driven up participation, driven up the number of candidates, and resulted in a greater diversity on the Board of Supervisors.
Before we thank our guests today, there are a few quick reminders and announcements. The City Club is very appreciative of our sponsors, including Evans, Elder, Brown, and Subert, ARP Oregon, Dot Dotson Photography, our host at the Baker Center here. And thank you to KLCC for airing our programs on Monday at 6:30 p.m. and to Community Television of Lane County for televising our programs at 12:30 or 12 noon Monday to Friday. Once again, thank you, Randy Prince, for taking the time. You've produced many great programs, and sometimes I'm not able to make it to the actual program, but you've done all the work, so please keep on doing that. And thank you to a special guest, Mr. Jackman Wilson, for the first Christian year. Next week's program is called Look, Ma, No Hands, The Age of Self-Driving Cars. That's a great title, actually. What are the risks and benefits of this technology? Additional information about this program and upcoming programs, you can find it at www.cityclubofeugene.org. Now, let us give a big round of applause to our guest today for bringing clarity to City Club, Kristen Eberhardt and Blair Barbier. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, and this concludes today's program.